We'll move to the fourth case of the morning, which is number 042517, Tracy Wilkening against the commissioner.
I just probably hit it with my...
Mr. Rose.
Good morning. Good morning. If it please the court, my name is Ashley Rose, and I represent the plaintiff in this case. I did not represent the plaintiff at the administrative level, but I did raise an issue in the district court, which was not, we concede, raised at the administrative level. And I've argued rather extensively as to why an issue exhaustion why issue exhaustion should not be imposed upon this case. The magistrate judge who decided the case basically agreed with the plaintiff that the government bears the burden of the proof of overpayment in an overpayment case. However, I think that Magistrate Judge Ashman believed that since the matter had not been raised at the administrative level, that is before the administrative law judge, that therefore he was not going to hold the government to that standard. I have argued extensively to try to counteract that conclusion because I believe that in cases of this nature, which do appear to engender a great deal of confusion, particularly in the minds of claimants, and more particularly in the case of Ms. Wilkening, who suffers from a bipolar disorder, these cases are very confusing to them, and they receive notices, and they don't always appreciate the nature of the notice. However, in this particular case...
What proof do you have of that?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
What proof do you have of that? A person suffering from bipolar does not understand the notice.
Well, we have several references in the record itself, in the hearing transcript, where Ms. Wilkening does... first of all, she states orally that she has not understood what was going on. Also,
she had the ability to continue her work and to complete her college courses.
Well, she was working off and on. She and the one of the reasons why I believe that this is a specifically problematical for Ms. Wilkening was that almost concurrently, she was experiencing a continuing disability review.
Did she ask for a waiver of overpayment if she didn't understand?
If she did at one point.
Well, then she understood it. She had an overpayment.
Well, this was one point. This was early on. She didn't follow up on it, and we are not contesting that that was the case. But I think that a person, a bipolar disorder is, in this particular case, is congenital, and it results in some periods of depression. It also results in other instances of periods of manic activity. She was experiencing a CDR, a continuing disability review, and the continuing disability review, mirabile dictu, says that she met a listing 12.04. When you meet a listing, no other considerations are applicable, and so she's entitled to her benefits. At the same time, she's getting or allegedly getting notices that she owes money. Now, irrespective of whether or not she is to be charged with knowledge, I think that the record as it stands, and this is really my first point, basically, is that the government should be at least held to at least some minimal standard of proof. In the record that we have before us in this particular case, it's impossible to find out specifically how much this poor woman owes, if she owes anything at all, except what we have already conceded. And the reason that I say that is that, rather peculiarly, the only document in the whole file, and this would be at the transcript record of page 177, mentions the figure $29,280.10. But try to prove that figure yourself, and you're not going to come up with it. If you look at that document, it is impossible to interpret it, to decipher it, to decode it. I would assume the analogy, the best analogy would be that this would be like a medical record that the courts, the judges, the lawyers, the administrative law judges are not capable or competent to interpret.
Well, she didn't think that she was entitled. She did think she wasn't entitled to it, and that's why she asked for the waiver. So she understood that she received an overpayment.
Well, I don't know that even if she did ask for a waiver, I don't believe that she knows how much she's supposed to pay. And that's the gravamen of my second point. And that is that no matter where you turn in this record, first, you can't interpret the basic document, this so-called master benefits record. There was no one from the agency present at the hearing to interpret it for the ALJ, and the ALJ himself is not capable of interpreting it. No one can interpret it. There's too many code words, too many abbreviations, and you don't know how the aggregate sum was arrived at. Proof of this is that, secondly, you cannot find from this record any notice that would substantiate that kind of an amount. I have gone through the record very carefully to show the absence of notices. Now, in some instances, there are notices, and in many cases, they're contradictory. For example, in 1997, she was given a notice saying that she herself, Tracy, owed $6,409.40. And her daughter, Samantha, owed $11.26 for a total of $7,535.40. However, if you turn to page 37 of the record, there's a notice that says she owes $3,340.10. However, if you turn to page 42, which has the same date as the page 37 document, add that up and it aggregates $3,321. So those two things don't match. There are also there's also occasion where the two of her children were given custody to her mother, and her mother asked for a waiver, and the waiver was granted. Now, we don't know whether an amount of $968 at page 43 of the record was credited against, was part of that waiver, or was that simply still something that her son Christopher still not that he owed, but that she owed on his behalf. The record just is simply in chaos if you try to prove the $29,280.10. The only other way that the administrative law judge arrived at that figure was that the attorney at the administrative law judge level sent him a document which really wasn't an official document from the agency, which bore that number. So that if you boil it all down, the agency never really came forward with any proof whatsoever. And I think that although I would recommend that this circuit take cognizance of the Ninth Circuit, which has a rather high standard of proof, and charged the government with some standard at this point, and also, on the other hand, to agree that the record does not support substantial evidence for the judge's ultimate finding that Tracy owes $29,280.10. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time and your listening.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. We'll hear now from Mr. DeClos.
Good morning. May it please the Court. With respect to the amount of the overpayment in this case, I think what's most important and what the district court judge relied on to find that the ALJ was supported by substantial evidence is that Ms. Wilkening's hearing counsel stipulated as to the amount, the $29,000 figure, both at the administrative hearing and in a pre-hearing brief. And in addition, there are records, or there are documents of record which support the $29,000 figure. As a result, the district court properly found that the ALJ was reasonable in adopting that figure without further development or exploration. And I would add that if Ms. Wilkening wants to further explore details of the amount, she has the option of requesting a reopening, which is an administrative procedure in which she can bring forth any arguments, contentions, concerns she might have, and the agency then has the opportunity to address those. With respect to the fault finding, which supports the denial of the waiver, the ALJ cited quite a bit of evidence which supported Ms. Wilkening's competence or ability to understand the notices, and therefore to understand that she was not entitled to receive benefits while working, which is really the basis for the fault finding here, is that you're not entitled to disability benefits if you're working and you're earning substantial gain, engaged in substantial gainful activity, which at the time was over $500 per month. And the court cited some of that evidence, which was her ability to file overpayment requests. So she responded to notices by filing the appropriate notice with the agency to pursue her overpayment waiver request. And in addition to that, she attended some college, and this was after the onset of her disability. She was able to work for certain periods at issue. And she indicated that her condition, although it may have been disabling under agency guidelines, it didn't require the continuous use of medication. And these factors together provide substantial support for the...
We don't know whether it required continuous use of medication. We just know that she didn't take it all the time.
That appears to be accurate.
Which could have... And the trier of fact could certainly have drawn another conclusion from that as to exactly what effect the medication had for her. A lot of people who have one or mental illness do not take their medication all the time, and that's the major problem.
Sure, I think that's very true.
Counsel, she didn't offer any evidence on her own as to how the bipolar illness affected her. Her being able to contest this, did she?
No, she didn't. She made appeared at the hearing and testified generally that
right.
She found she was confused and
she didn't offer any medical testimony in support.
No, there was no medical. In fact, the transcript the court transcript does not contain any medical testimony. Aside from maybe one agency reviewing document that really bears on the parameters or the elements of her condition or what limitations she may or may not have had. Although we do concede it was disabling under the Act.
Thank you.
If the court has no further questions, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kloven. You have 1 minute left for rebuttal, Mr. Rose, if you care to use it.
Thank you. I'll just make four very brief points. First of all, the record is wanting in notices pursuant to 20 CFR 404.502A paren A. These, I think, are at a minimum should have been present. Secondly, the ALJ had the opportunity, if he had so desired, to investigate something concerning her substantial gainful activity endeavors. This was not raised. There was no real inquiry into that. And so whether or not she was working periodically, like 3 months at a time, 2 months at a time, with hiatuses in between, we don't know that. Certainly a person with bipolar or even persons with mental more severe, more different mental illnesses, educably trained, mentally retarded people can go to college. She went to college 8 years before the hearing, and she didn't even complete one of her courses. That was not investigated. But I think that concerning the medical evidence shows that she was granted benefits on the basis of meeting the listing 12.04. There's not much evidence in there, but there, the ALJ certainly had the right to develop the record at that point. And so as a consequence, that's just absent. And so we're not saying she doesn't owe any money. We're just saying that this record is just so very poor that he didn't have substantial evidence to make those conclusions.
Thank you, Mr. Rose.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Indeed, our thanks to both counsel. And the case will be taken under advisement.